Tonight, my topic is the meaning of heresy. Now, when you ask the question, well, why would we study the meaning of heresy? Well, the reason for that is basically because, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, Clint and I had a conversation about a chapter in Alexander Campbell's book, The Christian System, in which article or chapter is titled Heresy. And we're going to talk about that tonight. That's really kind of going to be the point. Now, the way Clint announced my topic, I'm not sure I'm going to talk about the same thing he said I'm going to. I'm basically going to answer the question as to whether or not Mr. Campbell was right about what he said about the word heresy in the New Testament, and we'll get into that as we go along. If you don't have this book, by the way, I highly recommend that you purchase The Christian System and absorb its contents as much as you can, because it will be very instructive if you do. Well, before we get into the Bible use of the term, I want to start by talking about the definition, or the meaning, really, of the word heresy as it is commonly used in modern English. We can look in Merriam-Webster's dictionary, or Merriam-Webster.com, and see there basically three different nuances to the modern term. Number one, adherence to a religious opinion that is contrary to church dogma. Number two, denial of a revealed truth by a baptized member of the Roman Catholic Church. And number three, an opinion or doctrine contrary to church dogma. Now, if you look closely at this, essentially what you can see here is adherence to opinion, denial of something, and then opinion or doctrine. Now, all of these, in other words, have some connection in some way or another involving the actions of thinking or speaking. And that is thus the meaning of heresy in the modern sense of the term. Now then, we need to take a minute here to talk about the origin of the word, because it is relevant because of the way that it is translated in the New Testament in various passages. So the origin of the word, heresy is actually a loan word from Greek. In other words, they actually took a Greek word and brought it over into English, just gave it an English spelling, much like was done with the word baptism, for example. Baptism is not an English word, it's an anglicized Greek word, and the same is true with heresy. And that's the word right there. Normally I wouldn't put Greek up, but I want to put it up here to illustrate a point, and that is the pronunciation of this word heresis is the Greek term, and that little curved line right there is an H sound. That two letters in Koine and Byzantine and modern Greek is a short E sound. The rho is R, epsilon E, sigma S, iota I, and again sigma S. So I'm going to be pronouncing this from time to time as heresis, but what they do is they remove inflectional endings and put an anglicized ending on it and turn it into an English word. So that's essentially what you've got here with the word heresy. Okay, now with that point made, it's important also to point out the fact that the meaning of a loan word in a second language is not necessarily equivalent to the meaning of the source word in the source language. The proof of that is in the names of our states. If you tell people I'm from Missouri, they associate that with a state in the United States. It never occurs to them, never enters their mind. They have maybe no idea that the word of Missouri in the original language from which it came, one of the Native American languages, was actually meant people of the big canoes. Now, I know there's some people down in Laclede County that could fit that description, but and other places, but that's not what people think of when they think of Missouri. So heresis is not necessarily equal to heresy in meaning, although it's not impossible that it could be. Well, the question then becomes, is heresis in the New Testament ever equivalent in meaning to the word heresy as it is commonly known to be used in religious circles? And that's really the question tonight. And this question deals with, really, the issue is about how it's translated in the King James Bible, because that's what Mr. Campbell was contending with. That's the primary translation in that day and time, the King James Version. And in the King James Version, heresis is translated 4 times as heresy and 5 times as sect. And so there is a difference here in the way that it's translated, and it was this translation as heresy that Mr. Campbell was taking issue with. Well, Mr. Campbell, in The Christian System, on page 75, the chapter 28 begins, titled Heresy, appropriately enough. And let me just give you some quotes about what he says about the Greek word heresis. He says, it is properly rendered sect or faction, page 76. Heresis does always simply mean party in the sense of a sect or a faction. Only once is it rendered heresy in the Acts in the King James Bible, and in that place it ought most obviously to have been rendered sect. Then again, in the New Version, this word is, as it should be, uniformly rendered as sect. Now, the New Version that he's talking about here is the version that he published himself in 1826, I believe, 1826, that came to be called the Living Oracles Translation, a translation that was very much and widely used during the Reformation or the Restoration period of the 1800s. And that translation is called the Living Oracles Translation. Now, let me point out something here about the Living Oracles Translation. Well, first of all, let me give you this chart here. These are the 9 times that the word heresis occurs in the New Testament, and you'll see that each time the Living Oracles translates it as sect, or in the plural, as is appropriate, as sects. Well, the Living Oracles translation was not actually Alexander Campbell's own translation. In fact, it was based on a translation issued earlier in the century, in 1818, by another Campbell, unrelated as far as I know, George Campbell, Philip Doddridge, and James McKnight. Now, all I could find was a picture of his tomb, but there it is. And as far as I know, these other two fellows are dead also. So Campbell, McKnight, and Doddridge published published this translation that is called The Sacred Writings of the Apostles and Evangelists of Jesus Christ, commonly styled the New Testament translated from the original Greek, by George Campbell, James McKnight, and Philip Doddridge. Typical 19th century kind of title that's almost as long as the first chapter of any book. But anyway, this translation was the translation upon which Campbell based his own Living Oracles translation. Now, here's an interesting little tidbit that I didn't know. Maybe Clint did, I don't know. But in the preface to the Living Oracles translation, Campbell refers to George Campbell's preliminary dissertations and notes. And I thought, well, I'm going to look that up. It's easy to do these days to find these kinds of things. You don't have to drive 100 miles to find a library that has it. It's right there on the internet. And sure enough, you find it. And George Campbell's preliminary dissertations and notes, guess what, has a chapter titled Heresy. And when you read the chapter, it becomes obvious that Mr. Alexander Campbell simply carried over what he said about the subject from the critical notes of George Campbell. Page 115, the Greek word heresis was in our Savior's time nearly equivalent to the English words class, party, sect. In page 117, in my judgment, the last term, sect, is the only proper one. Listen to this. For the word heresy in the modern acceptation never suits the import of the original word as used in Scripture. In other words, he's saying heresis is not equal to heresy in meaning between Greek and the English language, or at least Greek in the New Testament period of time. Well, so heresy, according to modern usage, is opinion or doctrine, false teaching, or denial of revealed truth. According to what these two men have affirmed is that, I should point out here that, and this is an important distinction for later, is that these meanings here speak of the content of what is said, thought, or taught. Where heresis, on the other hand, according to the two Campbells, is sect, faction, or party, or something to that effect. In other words, it's a group or groups which are the result of division, not necessarily arising from false doctrine. Well, that sets up the question then that we're working to answer tonight. Now then, here is the New Testament, or a survey quickly of the passages where heresis occurs. It occurs 9 times in the New Testament, 6 times in Acts, 2 times in Paul, 1 time in Peter. And we'll just survey those right now. In Acts, the 17th chapter, rather 5th chapter, in verse 17, the record says, "Then the high priest rose up, and all they that were with him, which is the sect of the Sadducees, which were filled with indignation." Now, as we go through these passages, we're going to track two different components of this word. Number one, the word itself, or the translation word, and then we're going to track also the nuance or the sense. Is it neutral in the sense that it's not derogatory, or is it negative in the sense that it's derogatory? In this particular passage, I believe that it is clearly neutral. It's not speaking down about the Sadducees, it's just identifying them by the term sect as a group or party. If you look in Acts 15 and verse 5, and by the way, I'm quoting from the old version here because that's the one the Campbells were taking issue with, "But there rose up certain of the sect of the Pharisees which believed, saying that it was needful to circumcise them, etc." You can see here once again that this is just the neutral sense. One passage identifies the Sadducees as a group of a particular school of thought, and the other does the same with the Pharisees. Now, when we get to Acts 24, however, it takes on a bit of a different hue as we look at it closely, because here the orator Tertullus is condemning, or charging rather, Paul before the Roman government in behalf of the Jews to have Paul identified as a criminal according to Roman law. And here's what he says, "For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes." Now that is clearly a negative sense in which the word is used here, because he's wanting to bring a charge against Paul. He wants to paint Paul in a very negative light. So he's using it in a negative sense. And let me explain. When the Romans took over a country or an ethnic people, they would sometimes force them to do away with their religion, but sometimes they would make that religion legal. And that's what they did with the Jews. Judaism was legal under the Roman law. Now, when Tertullus is charging Paul here, he's speaking in the negative in the sense that he is charging Paul with practicing the Jews could practice legal religion. And within that religion, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the Essenes were all just groups under that head. And yet, Tertullus is charging Paul here with being outside of that umbrella of legal Judaism and was accusing him of religio illicita, as they would call it, illegal religion. It's like this. Under Judaism, the Romans would have accepted all of these as part of the Jewish religion, but Tertullus is charging Paul with being the leader of a sect and outside of the confines or the legal parameters of Judaism, and he wants to eradicate the Christians and have Paul punished as a ringleader of such a group. But then Paul comes in and says, well, no, that's not true at all. He says, "But I confess unto thee that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets." He's saying, why, we all believe the same scriptures they do, and we believe in the same God as they do. Paul's making a legal argument here, not necessarily a biblical one. He's just saying that as far as Roman law is concerned, they ought to see us in the same way that they see the other Jews, because not only do we follow the scriptures they follow, but we also, as they themselves also allow, we have hope toward God just like they do. And we believe that there is a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust, just like they do. Paul is saying, in other words, that the Nazarenes ought to be within Judaism and are not a sect or heresy at all. Now, that gets to the point here of the King James translation. The King James translation renders the word heresies here as the word heresy. Now, that's one of the things that the Campbells took issue with, is that, and I say Campbells, George and Alexander, not Thomas and Alexander, Their charge was, or their argument was, that since the charge against Paul by Tertullus in verse 5 is a sect, then it ought likewise to be sect here and not heresy. And that seems to make sense to me. That seems just as right as it can be, as far as I'm able to understand it. So here we find then it ought to read like this: "But I confess unto thee that after the way which they call a sect, rather than heresy, a sect, so worship I the God of my fathers," and so forth. So here's the point. The point is that this is a negative sense of the word as it is used in this passage, because it is Paul simply making a defense of himself. And let's go on here. Acts 26 and verse 5, "We knew," or "which knew me from the beginning, if they would testify that after the most straitest sect of our religion, I lived a Pharisee." I think this again is a neutral sense of the term. It's just identifying that particular group of people that everyone knew as the Pharisees. Acts 28 and verse 22 is a little bit of a different situation, because it seems to me that there may be actually some ambiguity in this particular usage. "But we desire to hear of thee what thou thinkest, for concerning this sect, we know that everywhere it is spoken against." Now, if you don't remember, the context in Acts 28 is that Paul's in prison in Rome for his first imprisonment there, and some of the Jews came there to interview him to find out more about the reason for which he was there. And at this point, it seems like they're not really quite sure whether to be for or against this man. They're not like the Jews back over in Jerusalem who were determined to get him killed. Instead, these individuals seem to be wanting seriously to inquire about this, which leads me to the conclusion that really what you've got here is some ambiguity. It may be negative, it may be positive, however you understand it, but on the same token, I think you could take this to be both as a possible meaning here, neutral and negative, because they don't know yet. They're waiting to find out. Once they interview Paul, they may fall down on the negative side, or when they interview him, they may fall down on the neutral side. And I know that some people are uncomfortable sometimes with ambiguity, but I think we can demonstrate from various passages that there is ambiguity in some of the wording and some of the language of the New Testament. But be that as it may, we must hasten on quickly here now. 1 Corinthians 11:19, "For there must be heresies among you, that they which are approved may be made manifest among you." Then again, this is a negative sense. Obviously, Paul is condemning this. If we look at Galatians 5 and verse 20, "Idolatry," this is the works of the flesh, "idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies." And then one more passage. Oh, well, this is definitely negative, obviously. One more passage, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21, or verse 1 rather. "But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there shall be false teachers among you, who shall privily bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction." This is clearly a negative sense as well. So, I know I've thrown a lot of information at you from a lot of quick reference passages, but let me just give you the summary here. Let me summarize what we've said. We've noticed that in the King James, the word heresy occurs 9 times in the New Testament, and the King James translates it 5 times as sect and 4 times as heresy. Moreover, we notice that it is used neutral, in a neutral sense, and in a negative sense. 3 times neutral, 5 times negative, and 1 time where it is ambiguous here, it seems to me, in Acts 28 and verse 22. This is my summation of the passages. Now, let me just inject the point here that I'm putting out here opinions, some of this is just conclusions that I've drawn, and I realize that as we go along, when it comes to the question and answer, I realize that there may be disagreements with what I've said or what I'm going to say as we move along. I perfectly understand that and recognize that. But in the book of Acts, now that we went into some detail with the charges against Paul, by Tertullus, I think we can summarize quickly the book of Acts here. Here, heresy is once translated as heresy. Heresis is translated as heresy in the King James Bible. But if we look At the newer versions, and I just pick about four of the major ones, the New King James Version here renders the word heresis here as sect. So does the NASB, so does the ESV, and so does the NIV. So I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with the fact that this word seems to have that sense in the passage for the reasons that the Campbells said, that he was charged with a sect and therefore ought to be defending himself against being what he was charged to be. And then moreover, we've got the translations of the modern era that give us some sense that that is an agreement that these translators have in our modern age. Now, if we add all the other words here, we find out that sect or party is generally the way the word is translated in all these other passages. So as far as all those are concerned, we, and the King James already has it anyway, really the only one we're concerned about is this right here, and we've already talked about it with reference to the nuance of the word in comparison to the two verses, Acts 24:5 and Acts 24:14. But let's let Campbell say this: the word heresis in the Acts of the Apostles does always simply mean party or sect. So I think that's probably right. But then let's look at the epistles. And here it gets a little more tricky, because in the epistles, we're going to start with 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 19 and look there at Paul's use of the word heresis in that particular passage and see if we can draw some conclusions about the sense of the word there. In 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 19, Paul says, "For there must also be heresies among you, that they which are approved may be made manifest among you." Now let me begin by making this point. There is a basic principle of determining the meaning of words, any words, and not just Greek, any words. And that is, words derive their meaning from context. Words derive their meaning from context. And so what we're going to do is we're going to use the context as the basis for deciding whether or not heresy, or heresies in the plural, is the best translation here. So it's like this. The context of 1 Corinthians. It seems to me, to my mind, that factions is the better translation here because it is factions that Paul has been dealing with from the beginning of the letter. You remember back in chapter 1, I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos, I'm of Cephas, etc. And Paul was condemning that. And these factions that were existing in the congregation at Corinth loom large in the background throughout the 1 Corinthian letter, even when Paul is discussing other issues and not necessarily directly referring to these factions. They're still there. They're in our peripheral vision all the way through the reading of the book of 1 Corinthians. But not only that, but when we look at the immediate context here, and not just the context of the whole book, Paul says, "For first of all, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you, and in part I believe it. For there must also be heresies, etc., as he says here in this particular statement." Now the question is heresies the best translation here? And it looks to me like factions, as I've argued, is the best translation, or a better one at least, because it is in keeping with the whole tenor of the letter, and this statement in verse 19 springboards off the previous statement in verse 18, and it seems to me that heresy, in the sense of which the word is used in the modern era and the modern age, is not the idea that Paul has under consideration here. Now, I want to say that it was only a century or two later, after the New Testament time, that the word did take on that meaning. The question is that the meaning that it has in this earlier period of the first century world? And so it seems like factions to me is the better translation. Well, you know, I didn't come up with that totally on my own, because look here. The New King James has factions instead of heresies. The New American Standard Version has factions. The ESV has factions. And the NIV is a little disappointing, as it often is. It uses the word differences. Now, differences is a little tepid, if you ask me, because Paul is very condemnatory in the language that he uses here. He doesn't speak in just differences in the sense of something that is completely indifferent, which seems to be the nuance of the word as used in the NIV. But I think factions will go with that and go on. Next, Galatians chapter 5 and verse 20. In Galatians chapter 5 and verse 20, we find that all-famous list of the works of the flesh. And Paul says, now, quoting the King James Bible, "For now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like." Now, let me remind you of the principle that I brought up a minute ago. The basic principle with understanding the meaning of terms is words derive their meaning from context. And so I just want to demonstrate here that from the immediate context of this passage, and given what we know elsewhere about the usage of heresies elsewhere in the scripture, we're going to draw a conclusion here that heresis is not the best translation here. That the King James translator simply transliterated it from the Greek word into the English word and therefore imported the burdened meaning of heresy into the New Testament scriptures. And I say burdened because heresy is a word that is very burdened, heavy laden with a lot of baggage by Roman Catholicism. And even by Anglicanism of the 17th century when the King James Version translators were translating. But let's look at the context here. Now, here's the way I want to explain this. I know that many of you very experienced Bible students with more experience in life than I've had in studying the scriptures, you know, or at least I think that most of us might recognize the fact that these words in this list of the sins of the flesh are actually could be grouped in little subgroups or groups of meaning here and there. For example, adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, these kind of belong together. Now, we might disagree about how to divide these little groups up within this list, but that's not the point tonight. The point is that you can divide them up to some extent, and I think people will agree with that. Idolatry and witchcraft, these kind of go together, because idolatry and witchcraft, one or the other or both combined, essentially amount to using incantations or ritual of some sort in order to call upon the power of a deity that is not Jehovah. Therefore, these two go together. Then hatred, variance, emulations, wrath. Now, I don't know if many people know what emulations are, but these are personal conflicts among people. I think you could say more about it, obviously. But look here. Strife, seditions, and heresies, these go together, as I want to demonstrate. But I'll go on. Envies, murders, drunkenness, revelries go together. Revelries are essentially drinking parties or orgies or a combination thereof. Certainly that classifies with drunkenness. But let's go back to this. This is the one we're interested in. Now, I think we can make this more clear, but the point I'm making about this context of these three words, you might include the one, the wrath, before it. Just depends on how you want to divide it up. But strife, seditions, heresies might be a little more clear if we use the New King James translation as an illustration, and it retains the word heresies in the New King James. Selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies. Now, based on what we know about the word heresies elsewhere, and based on the fact that selfish ambitions is a reference to conflict and personality conflict among brethren in a congregation, and the result of that sometimes is dissensions or standoffs that take place, and then those give birth to full-blown factions within the congregation, it seems to me that factions is the better word. Because here, heresy means opinion or doctrine contrary to church dogma, false teaching, and denial of revealed truth. Now, those things may be a work of the flesh. Indeed, they are. But I don't know if that's what Paul's saying here. Because sect, faction, or party certainly works much better, does it not, given what we already know about heresies elsewhere, and what the context here suggests is that selfish ambitions and dissensions, or factions, is the better translation in this particular case. And lo and behold, the New American Standard Bible renders that way. Galatians 5 and verse 20. Idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousies, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions. So it seems to me that is right. Disputes, dissensions, and factions. So here we go. We look now at the translations go, and look at that. The New King James Version uses heresies. Now, why did they do that? Well, that's a good question. No, I have a lot of questions about the New King. I use the New King James in my preaching, but there are some things about it I just don't like. And one of the things is there are so many things that they could have updated that they didn't. This is one of them. Another one is the use of the word bishop in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and the other places where it's used. But let me point this out. You know, I think the translators of the New King James Version are under pressure from their publishers and from the people who are funding the project. These people who fund the project have to sell a Bible. And they know there's a market out there for people who like the King James Version but would like something updated. And so it looks to me, I'm not reading into it, I don't know, I'm just guessing, that it looks to me like what happens sometimes is that the New King James Version translators stay with the old version just because it's the old version. And they don't update it. And I think that's why they don't hear. Now, the NASB did, however. The ESV calls it divisions, and the NIV, we're happy with it now, calls it factions. And by the way, we should evaluate a translation on a word or phrase by phrase basis and not simply dismiss them wholeheartedly without considering them part by part and piece by piece. So anyway, next then, we got to hasten on here. I'm going to run out of time if I'm not careful. Heresies in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1. But there were false prophets also among the people, even as there shall be false teachers among you, who privily shall bring in damnable heresies, and bring, or rather, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. Now, this is a little bit of a more difficult passage. This takes a little more unraveling, but we'll do what we can with it. And you may not agree with my conclusion, and I'm all right with that. But I want to point it out here. In defining heresies, let me walk you through it. Number one, a group that holds tenets distinctive to it. Now that's the definition. Then in italics, the lexicon gives you alternative gloss translation, one word translation possibilities. Sect, party, school, faction. Well, my, that's just right in keeping with what we've been saying all along, isn't it? And without going through all these steps here, these are basically the passages that we've already looked at. And what they do here is they group under definition number one all of the passages we've looked at so far. But then when you get down to number two, which is a completely separate group from the first grouping of definitions and examples, number two says that which distinguishes a group's thinking. And then the alternative glosses are opinion, dogma. Well, isn't that what we said back at the beginning? Is the definition of heresy in modern English having to do with words of thinking, speaking, or teaching? And so they're saying now, notice here, they give this definition and then they cite 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1, and that's the only verse that they put in that category. So it looks forevermore like this word should be translated heresies. Or something like that. Now, if we look at the translations, look what the translations do. The ones I've cited so far all translate it as heresies. So it sounds like the word here means what the King James translators said it meant. That it means heresy and not a group, faction, or sect. Now, if we just look at that as the evidence, we might be convinced that, well, that's what the word means in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1, in spite of everything that has been said in other places thus far. But look here. And this I present not so much just to make the point, although it makes my point, but also to demonstrate the fact that lexicons of the Greek language are not perfect, and nor do they claim to be perfect. It's amazing to me, sometimes I hear people quote the Greek lexicon as if it had as much authority as the Apostle Paul. And these men would not claim such authority, nor should we quote them with such authority as they sometimes are quoted. But look here. Bauer, Art, Gingrich, and Danker add this one statement. Perhaps it's up here. Perhaps it belongs in this category. Now, I might differ with that. I might actually argue that it should belong in 1C instead of 1B, but that's a moot point. Either way, you get it out of this column down here and up here, right? So, that doesn't matter for our argument tonight, but perhaps it has another meaning. Now, in the course of studying this word, I also looked it up in Low and Nida, which is the other premier Greek-English lexicon of our day. If you don't have it, you fellows who are interested in studying the Bible in depth, I recommend you get it. Save your money, but I recommend that you get it. Low and Nida, they define heresis in three ways, or group it into three semantic domains, they call it. A religious party, division, down in 1 Corinthians 11:19, up there are the Acts passages, and then look here, false teaching, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1. So it sounds like it's false teaching here. And I will say this, if you take it in the sense of false teaching rather than factions, it's better to translate it as false teaching than heresies. Because heresy, as I said, is a very loaded word, carries a lot of ecclesiastical baggage that really just throws a mist, the mist of confusion, into the scripture. Now, false teaching. Let's take a look at that for just a moment. When you look it up in this section right here, 33.241, and go over there and turn in the second volume of the lexicon to find it over there, false teaching, here's what they say. They give you a definition first. The content of teaching, which is not true. And then they give you a couple of gloss, one or two word glosses. False teaching, untrue doctrine, heresy. And then they give you a translation. They will bring in false teachings which are destructive. 2 Peter 2 and verse 1. Now this, my friends, is clearly in suggesting that this word means the teaching that is brought in and not the group as we've had in the other uses of the word. But look here. You know, during the time that I was studying this particular passage and studying for this topic, I don't remember what caused me to do this, but I'm sure I was just studying the passage. And I went to Low and Nida, the same lexicon here, and looked up the verb that is translated secretly bring in, where they will bring in false teachings. In other words, we're not looking at this noun anymore, we're looking at a different word, the verb that is part of this sentence. And the verb parisago. And it's translated secretly bring in the Old King James Version. Now look here what happens in this lexicon. This is another proof that lexicons are not perfect. And maybe they did this on purpose. I don't know. We'll see. The definition of this verb is to cause something to happen by introducing factors from outside. That's the definition. And now they're going to provide us with some glosses of that one word. To bring in, to cause from outside. Now look here. Now they're going to give us some alternative translations for this word, this verb, and they're going to use 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1 to do it. And here's what they say, who will bring in destructive divisions. And, or you could say, who will cause destructive divisions. And who will cause divisions which will greatly harm people. Now you see what's the problem here. Now, I'm not accusing these men of making a mistake or an error, because we've already seen from Bauer, Art, and Gingrich that it's possible to take this word in both ways, or at least one or the other way. And now we find that there is some evidence of this in Low and Nida, although I'm not sure that it was intentional or not, but we get the impression here clearly that it's possible to translate this word as divisions or factions, as we've suggested. And this lexicon seems to bear that fact out. So it's possible that it has that significance in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 1. So we could word the passage like this. I'm going to inject my own here in the underlined section. into the King James or New King James Version, but there were also false prophets among the people, just as there will be false teachers among you who will secretly introduce ruinous factions, even denying the Lord who bought them and bring upon themselves swift destruction. That's if we go with the definition that is given in Lowanida over under heresies. But if we go with the one that is over there under, or rather under, I mean to say under parisago, the verb. But if we go with the one under heresies, there were false prophets, even as there will be false teachers, who will bring in false teachings which are destructive. And it may be that it doesn't have to be one or the other, but there is ambiguity here, perhaps. Because when you bring in factions, though not necessarily, oftentimes that involves false teaching, although it doesn't have to. You can form a faction on personality, as the Corinthians demonstrated, although it was other factors, I too, suppose, as well. So then, I'm going to end up here, and I hope I don't go over. If I go over a couple of minutes, you won't tap me down, will you? Faction or sect, and this is what I want to ask for your opinions and hear what people say about this, because faction or sect we think of maybe as a synonym. And the reality is, as linguists tell us, there's no such thing as an actual synonym. Every group of words that seems like a synonym sometimes have meanings in the area where they overlap, but out in the areas where they don't overlap, they have connotations that vary and differ from each other. I think that's true with faction and sect, at least as far as it is in my mind, and that's why I'm appealing for other people's opinions here. Faction is a term to my mind that conveys the idea of a separate group within the bigger group. For example, you had the Paul faction, you had the Cephas faction, you had the Apollos faction at Corinth, but they hadn't broken away yet into a separate and completely distinct group. They were still part of the church. But once they break away and go out and form their own body and begin to propagate themselves separately from the original group, they become a sect. And so it's for that reason that I am not sure that Campbell and Campbell are correct by saying that it should be uniformly translated sect, as they suggest here and as the Living Oracle's translation reflects. So look here. I'm going to make my own suggestions, and this is where I'm going to close. My own suggestions are these. In Acts 5 and verse 17, it means school. Now, I'm not stuck on that word. It doesn't have to be that word. It could be another word that conveys the similar idea. Then the high priest rose up and all those who were with him, which is the school of the Sadducees, and they were filled with indignation. This reflects the fact that it is a neutral term. If we use the word sect, sect, correct me if I'm wrong, and this is in my mind, maybe you know better, sect is always negative. Even if it's used in certain ways where it doesn't seem to be, it always conveys a little negativity, and I don't think that exists in this passage. And so we use the word school. Then Acts 15 and verse 5, same there, same thing, the Pharisees. But some of the school of the Pharisees, or the group of the Pharisees, or whatever, who believe, rose up saying, etc. Then if we look at these two passages where Tertullus is accusing Paul before the Jews and the particular thing he's trying to get him convicted of, I would say sect works pretty good there, because he's saying this man is of a separate group. He's out here beyond the periphery. He's gone out as a renegade, and we don't agree with him, and the Roman government therefore ought to condemn him and to stamp out that group. And then Paul's defense is the same in Acts 24 and verse 14. He's a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. And Paul says, I confess to you that I worship the God of my fathers according to the way which they call a sect. Then Acts 26 and verse 5, again, school. They were willing to testify, if they were willing to testify, that according to the strictest school of our religion, or the strictest group of our religion, the Pharisees, I lived as a Pharisee. I'm out of time as of right now. I'm almost finished. But we desire to hear from you what you think, for concerning this group, we know that it is spoken against everywhere. This is Acts 28, 22. That should be 22 up there and down there. And so here, this is the one I said is ambiguous. And really, the outcome is to be determined whether it's neutral or negative after they find out in the investigation. At this point, they aren't committed to one way or the other when they ask Paul this question. Then, factions, negative. I've already read these passages. 1 Corinthians, Galatians 5, factions, negative, in the works of the flesh. And then finally, 2 Peter, factions, either one of these. And I'd be interested to hear what people have to say about this particular passage in question, and in particular, rather. So, that's the end.